We are continuing chapter 10 of Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. So they had just gotten on the train, remember? The train was gathering still more speed, so that the houses outside the window flashed past and they swayed where they stood. "Shall we go and find a compartment then?" Harry asked Ron and Hermione. Ron and Hermione exchanged looks. Ron said. Ron and I are supposed to go to the prefect's carriage," Hermione said awkwardly. Ron wasn't looking at Harry. He seemed to have become intensely interested on the fingernails of his left hand. "Okay," Harry said. "Fine, right." "I don't think we'll have to stay there all journey," Hermione said quickly. "Our letters said that we just get instructions from the head boy and girl, and then patrol the corridors from time to time." "Fine," said Harry again. "I might see you later, then." "Yeah, definitely," said Ron, casting a shifty, anxious look at Harry. "It's a pain having to go down there. I'd rather, but we have to. I mean, I'm not enjoying it. I'm not Percy," he said defiantly. "I know you're not," said Harry, and he grinned. But as Hermione and Ron dragged their trunks, Crookshanks and a caged pigwidgeon, their trunks, Crookshanks and a caged pigwidgeon, off toward the engine end of the train, Harry felt an odd sense of loss. He had never traveled on the Hogwarts Express without Ron. "Come on," Ginny told him. "If we get a move on, we'll be able to save them places." "Right," said Harry, picking up Hedwig's cage in one hand and the handle of his trunk in the other. They struggled off down the corridor, peering through the glass-paneled doors into the compartments they passed, which were already full. Harry could not help noticing that a lot of people stared back at him with great interest, and that several of them nudged their neighbors and pointed him out. After he met this behavior in 5 consecutive carriages, he remembered that the Daily Prophet had been telling its readers all summer what a lying show-off he was. He wondered bleakly whether all the people staring and whispering believed the stories. In the very last carriage, they met Neville Longbottom, Harry's fellow 5th-year Gryffindor, his round face shining with the effort of pulling his trunk along and maintaining one-handed grip on his struggling toad trap. "Hi, Harry," he panted. "Hi, Ginny. Everywhere is full. I can't find a seat." "What are you talking about?" said Ginny, who squeezed past Neville to peer into the compartment behind him. "There's room in this one. There's only Loony Lovegood in here." Neville mumbled something about not wanting to disturb anyone. "Don't be silly," said Ginny, laughing. "She's all right." She slid the door open and pulled her trunk inside. Harry and Neville followed. "Hi, Luna," said Ginny. "Is it okay if we take these seats?" The girl beside the window looked up. She had straggly, waist-length, dirty blonde hair, very pale eyebrows, and protuberant eyes that gave her a permanently surprised look. Harry knew at once why Neville had chosen to pass this compartment by. This girl gave off an aura of distinct dottiness. Perhaps it was the fact that she had stuck her wand behind her left ear for safekeeping, or that she had chosen to wear a necklace of butterbeer caps, or that she was reading a magazine upside down. Her eyes ranged over Neville and came to rest on Harry, and she nodded. "Thanks," said Ginny, smiling at her. Harry and Neville stowed the 3 trunks in Hedwig's cage in the luggage rack and sat down. The girl called Luna watched them over her upside-down magazine, which was called The Quibbler. She did not seem to need to blink as much as normal humans. She stared and stared at Harry, who had taken the seat opposite her and now wished he had not. "Had a good summer, Luna?" Ginny asked. "Yes," said Luna dreamily, without taking her eyes off Harry. "Yes, it was quite enjoyable, you know." "You're Harry Potter," she added. "I know I am," said Harry. Neville chuckled. Luna turned her pale eyes upon him instead. "And I don't know who you are." "I'm nobody," said Neville hurriedly. "No, you're not," said Ginny sharply. "Neville Longbottom, Luna Lovegood. Luna's in my year, but in Ravenclaw. Wit beyond measure is man's greatest treasure," said Luna in a sing-song voice. She raised her upside-down magazine high enough to hide her face and fell silent. Harry and Neville looked at each other with their eyebrows raised. Ginny suppressed a giggle. The train rattled onward, speeding them out into the open country. It was an odd, unsettled sort of day. One moment the carriage was full of sunlight, and the next they were passing beneath ominously gray clouds. "Guess what I got for my birthday," said Neville. "Another remember-all?" said Harry, remembering the marble-like device Neville's grandmother had sent him in an effort to improve his abysmal memory.
"I know what it is."
"What is it?"
"A Mimbulus Mimbletonia."
"No," said Neville. "I could do with this one, though. I lost the old one ages ago. Sorry, I could do with one, though. I lost the old one ages ago. No, no, look at this." He dug his hand that was not keeping a firm grip on Trevor into his school bag, and after a little bit of rummaging, he pulled out what appeared to be a small gray cactus in a pot, except it was covered with what looked like boils rather than spines. "Say it."
"Mimbulus Mimbletonia,"
he said proudly. Harry stared at the thing. It was pulsating slightly, giving the rather sinister look of some diseased organs. "It's really, really rare," said Neville, beaming. "I don't know if there's one in the greenhouse in Hogwarts, even. I can't wait to show it to Professor Sprout. My great-uncle, LG, got it for me in the Serio. I'm going to see if I can breed from it." Harry knew that Neville's favorite subject was herbology, but for the life of him, you cannot see what he would want with this stunted little plant. "Does it do anything?" he asked. "Loads of stuff," said Neville proudly. "It's got an amazing defense mechanism. Here, hold Trevor for me." He dumped the toad into Harry's lap and took a quill from his school bag. Luna Lovegood's popping eyes appeared over the top of her upside-down magazine, watching what Neville was doing. Neville held the
Mimbulus Mimbletonia
up to his eyes, his tongue between his lips, between his teeth. Chose his spot and gave the plant a sharp prod with the tip of his quill. Liquid squirted from every boil on the plant. Thick, stinking dark green jets of it. They hit the ceiling, the walls, and spattered Luna's Lovegood's magazine. Ginny, who had flung her arms up in front of her face just in time, merely looked as though she was wearing a slimy green hat. But Harry, whose hands had been busy preventing the escape of Trevor, received a faceful. Smelled.
You okay?
Yeah.
It smelled like rancid man manure.
Ew.
Neville, whose face and torso was also drenched, shook his head to get the worst out of his eyes. "Sorry," he gasped. I haven't tried that before. Didn't realize it'd be quite so... Don't worry, though. Stink sap's not poisonous," he added nervously, as Harry spat a mouthful onto the floor. At that precise moment, the door of their compartment split open. "Oh, hello, Harry," said a nervous voice. "In bad time?" Harry wiped the lenses of his glasses with his Trevor-free hand. A very pretty girl, with long, shiny black hair, was standing in the doorway, smiling at him.
Cho Chang.
The seeker on the Ravenclaw team. "Oh, hi," said Harry blankly. Said Cho. "Well, I just thought I'd say hello. Bye, then." She closed the door again, rather pink in the face, and departed. Harry slumped back in his seat and groaned. He would have liked Cho to discover him sitting with a group of very cool people, laughing their heads off at a joke he had just told. He would not have chosen to be sitting with Neville and Looney Lovegood, clutching a toad and dripping in stink sap. "Never mind," said Ginny bracingly. "Look, we can get rid of all this easily." She pulled out her wand. "Scourgify." The stink sap vanished. "Sorry," said Neville again, in a small voice. This is at the point where you go after Cho and say, "Hey, sorry about that."
Mm-hmm.
Just wanted to get away from those losers for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Had a little chat.
She's a loser, though. I don't like
Cho. Cho, why?
Mm-hmm. She turns out to be kind of a bitch.
No, she doesn't.
Yes, she does.
Does she?
Yep.
But he can still do her.
He has to do Ginny.
He'll do both of them.
No.
Why can't he... he could get his practice on show and then prepare for Ginny.
That's fair enough. Ginny gets a lot of practice in.
Does she? Yeah. With who?
Dean Thomas. All kinds of boys.
All kinds of boys. Hey, you should probably wash your hands. We interrupt this program as Carrie goes to wash her hands so she can cuddle with me and give me a very mean look. That's what we would call a kitten with a look of murder on her face. Murder. You gotta be careful with kittens sometimes. They're adorable, but they want to kill you all the time. At least some of the time they want to kill you. It's like they're torn apart because part of them wants to snuggle with you and part of them wants to kill you. Mm-hmm. What are you doing?
Emptying this. Ooh, it's coming out.
Shall we pause the recording?
Yes.
Okay. This program will return shortly. And we're back. For you listening to this, no time will have passed. But in reality, many years have passed. And we are now continuing exactly where we left off. And I'll have to figure out where that was.
Scourgeify.
Wait. For some reason, the words look smaller than they did just a few minutes ago.
That's very strange, love.
It's really weird. Oh, yes. Scourgeify. Here we are. Sorry, said Neville again in a small voice. Ron and Hermione did not turn up for nearly an hour, by which time the food trolley had already gone by. Harry, Ginny, and Neville had finished their pumpkin pasties and were busy swapping chocolate frog cards when the compartment door slid open, and they walked in, accompanied by Crookshanks and a shrilly hooting pigwidgeon in his cage. "I'm starving," said Ron, stowing pigwidgeon next to Hedwig, grabbing a chocolate frog from Harry and throwing himself into the seat next to him. He ripped open the wrapper, bit off the frog's head, and leaned back, with his eyes closed, as though he had a very exhausted morning. So, I have a question. Ron is always, like, a bitch about not taking money from Harry. And here he just grabs Harry's chocolate. What a bitch. Harry wants to give you money. And you say, no, I'm too proud. But then you take his chocolate. Not cool. Not cool. Plus, if he's hungry, eating chocolate is a very poor decision. Didn't his mother teach him anything? And wouldn't they have given them lunch or something at the meeting? Like, every meeting I've ever been at has served some sort of food.
Meetings I've been to don't serve food.
Really?
You get spoiled.
Yeah, probably.
Because they're like, okay, we have frail mathematicians. We must feed them or they will die in front of us.
That's probably true. Mathematicians, like, grad students in general, like free food. It's just, like, a steady state of a grad student. Because we don't have actually enough money to buy real food. Well.
You do.
Yeah. But the idea is that you generally may not, you know. Especially, math grad students, it's a little different. Like, for other departments, they don't pay them as well as
oh,
they
totally.
Do for us. Because they need us, because we make their engineers go.
Right. That's true.
I mean, we provide a valuable service to the university, and they pay us about half of what market wage is.
Right.
So, you know. Anyways. Well, there are 2 fifth-year prefects from each house, said Hermione, looking thoroughly disgruntled as she took her seat. Boy and girl from each. And guess who's the Slytherin prefect, said Ron,
oh, no.
Still with his eyes closed. Malfoyle, replied Harry at once, his worst fear confirmed. Course, said Ron bitterly, stuffing the rest of the frog into his mouth and taking another. Harry slapped him in the face and said,
not.
Don't take my goddamn chocolate, bitch.
Wait, say it in
right
like
there.
Your ghetto voice.
No. Harry slapped him across the face, leaving a mark the size of an omelet, and said, don't you be taking my chocolate, bitch. I paid my chocolate for this with my coins.
I take care of my kids.
I take care of my kids.
You're supposed to take care of your kids, you dumb motherfucker.
Oh, and guess who the other Slytherin is?
Pansy Parkinson.
And that complete cow, Pansy Parkinson, Hermione mm-hmm. said viciously, how she got to be a prefect. When she's thicker than a concussed troll. Who's Hufflepuffs? Harry asked. Ernie McMillan and Hannah Abbott, said Ron thickly.
And Anthony Goldstein and Padma Patil for Ravenclaw, said Hermione. You went to the Yule Ball with Padma Patil, said a vague voice. Everyone turned to look at Luna Lovegood, who was gazing unblinkingly at Ron over the top of the Quibbler. He swallowed his mouthful of frog. Yeah, I know I did, he said, looking mildly surprised. She didn't enjoy it very much, Luna informed him. She doesn't think you treated her very well, because you wouldn't dance with her. I don't think I'd have minded, she added thoughtfully. I don't like dancing very much. She retreated behind the Quibbler again. Ron stared at the cover with his mouth hanging open for a few seconds, and then looked around at Ginny. Good for Luna! Ron was a bitch at that ball. And then looked around at Ginny for some kind of explanation, but Ginny had stuffed her knuckles in her mouth to stop herself giggling. Ron shook his head, bemused, and checked his watch. Wait a second. I've seen this word too many times.
Bemused?
Yeah. I thought...
Doesn't it mean befuddled?
Yeah. That's right. Okay. Okay, it just means confused or befuddled. We're supposed to patrol the corridors every so often, he told Harry and Neville, and we can give out punishments if people are misbehaving. I can't wait to get Crabbe and Goyle for something. You're not supposed to abuse your position, Ron, said Hermione sharply. Yeah, right, because Malfoy won't abuse it at all, said Ron sarcastically. So you're going to descend to his level? No, I'm just going to make sure I get his mates before he gets mine. For heaven's sake, Ron. I'll make Goyle do lines. It'll kill him. He hates writing, said Ron happily. He lowered his voice to Goyle's low grunt and, screwing up his face in a look of pain concentration, mimed writing in midair. I must not look like a baboon's backside. You know, Ron should not be a prefect. For Christ's sake. Nor should Malfoy. Or Pansy. I mean, seriously, whoever picked these prefects is just awful.
Pretty sure the heads of house picked the prefects.
In which case, Dumbledore should have had a word with them. Like, seriously, guys. Everybody laughed, but nobody laughed harder than Luna Lovegood. She let out a scream of mirth that caused Hedwig to wake up and flap her wings indignantly, and Crookshanks to leap up into the luggage rack, hissing. She laughed so hard that her magazine slipped out of her grasp, slid onto the floor. That was funny. Her prominent eyes swam with tears as she gasped for breath, staring at Ron. Utterly nonplussed. He looked around at the others, who were now laughing at the expression on Ron's face, and at the ludicrously prolonged laughter of Luna Lovegood, who was rocking backward and forward, clutching her sides. Are you taking the Mickey? Ron said, frowning at her. I don't know what that means.
He's drinking.
Oh. Baboon's backside, she choked, holding her ribs. Everyone else was watching Luna laughing, but Harry, glancing at the magazine up on the floor, noticed something that made him dive for it. Upside down, it had been hard to tell what picture was on the front, but Harry now realized it was a fairly bad cartoon of Cornelius Fudge. Harry only recognized him because of the lime green bowler hat. One of Fudge's hands clenched a bag of gold, the other hand was throttling a goblin. The cartoon was captioned, How Far Will Fudge Go to Gain Gringotts? Beneath this were listed the titles of other articles inside the magazine. Corruption in the Quidditch League, How the Tornadoes Are Taking Control. Isn't tight. That was super gross. I could see the flecks flying out onto the pillow, which you will probably smush in my face at some point. So it's equivalent to you sneezing in my face. Uh-huh. At least you're cute. You're adorable. Alright. Secrets of the Ancient Runes Revealed. Sirius Black, Villain or Victim? Can I have a look at this? Harry asked Luna eagerly. She nodded, still gazing at Ron, breathless with laughter. Harry opened the magazine and scanned the index. Until this moment, he'd completely forgotten the magazine Kingsley had handed Mr. Weasley to give to Sirius, but it must have been this edition of the Quibbler. He found the page and turned excitedly to the article. This, too, was illustrated by a rather bad cartoon. In fact, Harry would not have known it was supposed to be Sirius if it hadn't been captioned. Sirius was standing on a pile of human bones with his wand out. The headline on the article read, Sirius, black as he's painted, notorious mass murderer or innocent singing sensation. Harry had to read the sentence several times before he was convinced he had not misunderstood it. Since when had Sirius been a singing sensation? For 14 years, Sirius Black has been believed guilty of the mass murder of 12 innocent muggles and one wizard. Black's audacious escape from Azkaban 2 years ago has led to the widest manhunt ever conducted by the Ministry of Magic. None of us has ever questioned that he deserves to be recaptured and handed to the Dementors. But does he? Startling new evidence has recently come to light that Sirius Black may not have committed the crimes for which he was sent to Azkaban. In fact, says Doris Perkis of 18 Acanthania Way, Little Norton, Black may have not even been present at the killings. What people don't realize is that Sirius Black is a false name, Mrs. Perkis said. The man people believe to be Sirius Black is actually Stubby Boardman, lead singer of the popular singing group, the Hobgoblins, who retired from public life after being struck in the ear by a turnip at a concert in Little Norton Church Hall nearly 15 years ago. I recognized him the moment I saw his picture in the paper. Now, Stubby couldn't possibly have committed those crimes because on the day in question, he happened to be enjoying a romantic candlelit dinner with me. I have written to the Ministry of Magic and expecting him to give Stubby, alias Sirius, a full pardon any day now.
Ah, you're hurting me more than I'm hurting myself. Get away. Get away! I want to die, dumb.
Ow! No, 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 no. Stop. You can't. Harry finished reading and stared at the page in disbelief. Perhaps, what are you doing? Stop. What's wrong with you? What's wrong with you?
What's
wrong with you? Just
let me hear myself instead of you hurting my wrists and things.
Perhaps it was just, ugh. God, why do you do that? What are you doing, boo?
Okay, good. I'm good now.
Uh-huh. Because you're not going to start in another few minutes. Perhaps it was a joke, he thought. Perhaps, look, your spit on this is on the book. Perhaps the magazine often printed spoof items. He flicked a few pages back and found the piece on Fudge. Cornelius Fudge, the Minister of Magic, has denied that he had any plans to take over the running of the Wizarding Bank, Gringotts, when he was elected Minister of Magic 5 years ago. Fudge has always insisted that he wants nothing more than to cooperate peacefully with the Guardians of our gold. But does he? Sources close to the minister have recently disclosed that Fudge's dearest ambition is to seize control of the goblin gold supplies, and that he will not hesitate to use force if need be. It wouldn't be the first time either, said a minister inside. Cornelius Goblin Crusher, Fudge, that's what his friends call him, if you could hear him, when he thinks nobody's listening. Oh, he's always talking about the goblins. He's done in. He's had them drowned. He's had them dropped off buildings. He's had them poisoned. He's had them cooked in pies. Fudge did not read any further.
I don't think
Harry didn't read any further.
Would taste very good.
Yeah, probably. Fudge might have many faults, but Harry found it extremely hard to imagine him ordering goblins to be cooked in pies. He flicked through the rest of the magazine, pausing every few pages to read an accusation that the Tuthill Tornadoes were winning the Quidditch League by a combination of blackmail, illegal broom tampering, and torture. An interview with a wizard who claimed to have flown to the moon on a clean sweep 6 and brought back a bag of moon frogs to prove it. And an article on ancient runes, which at least explained why Luna had been reading Quibbler upside down. According to the magazine, if you turn the runes on their heads, they revealed a spell to make your enemies' ears turn into kumquats. In fact, compared to the rest of the articles on the Quibbler, the suggestion that Sirius might really be the lead singer of the Hobgoblins was quite sensible. Anything good in there? Ron asked Harry as he closed the magazine. Of course not, said Hermione scathingly before Harry could answer. The Quibbler's rubbish, everybody knows that. Excuse me, said Luna. Her voice had suddenly lost its dreamy quality. My father's the editor. Oh, said Hermione, looking embarrassed. Well, it's got some interesting, it's quite... I'll have it back, thank you, said Luna coldly, and leaning forward, she snatched it out of Harry's hands. Rifling through it to page 57, she turned it resolutely upside down again and disappeared behind it, just as the compartment door opened for the third time. Should we stop there?
That sounds good.
Yeah. Let's see. Well, there's really not much left in the chapter.
Okay, then let's finish.
I guess we can finish it. Harry looked around. He had expected this, but that did not make the sight of Draco Malfoy smirking at him from between his cronies Crabbe and Goyle any more enjoyable. What, he said aggressively before Malfoy could open his mouth. Manners, Potter, or I'll have to give you a detention, drawled Malfoy, whose sleek blonde hair and pointed chin were just like his father's. You see, I, unlike you, have been made a prefect, which means that I, unlike you,
have the power to hand out punishments. Yeah, said Harry, but you, unlike me, are a git, so get out and leave us alone. Ron, Hermione, Ginny, and Neville laughed. Malfoy's lip curled. Tell me, how does it feel being second best to Weasley, Potter? He asked. Shut up, Malfoy, said Hermione sharply. I seem to have touched a nerve, said Malfoy, smirking. Well, just watch yourself, Potter, because I'll be dogging your footsteps in case you step out of line. Get out, said Hermione, standing up. Snickering, Malfoy gave Harry a last malicious look and departed. Crabbe and Goyle lumbered in his wake. Hermione slapped the compartment door behind them and turned to look at Harry, who knew at once that she, like him, had registered what Malfoy had said and been just as unnerved by it. Chuck us another frog, said Ron, who had clearly noticed nothing.
Wait, what did he say?
He said, I'll be dogging your footsteps.
Oh, no.
Harry could not talk freely in front of Neville and Luna. He exchanged another nervous look with Hermione and then stared out the window. He had thought Sirius coming to him to the station was a bit of a laugh, but suddenly it seemed reckless, if not downright dangerous. Hermione had been right. Sirius should not have come. What if Mr. Malfoy had noticed the black dog and told Draco? What if he deduced that the Weasleys, Lupin, Tonks, and Moody knew where Sirius was hiding? Or had Malfoy's use of the word dogging been a coincidence? The weather remained undecided as they traveled farther and farther up north. Rain splattered the windows in a half-hearted way, and then the sun put in a feeble appearance before the clouds drifted over it once more. When darkness fell and lamps came on inside the carriages, Luna rolled up the Quibbler, put it carefully away in her bag, and took to staring at everyone in the compartment again. Harry was sitting with his forehead pressed against the train window, trying to get a first glimpse of Hogwarts, but it was a moonless night, and the rain-streaked window was grimy. We better change, said Hermione at last. She and Ron pinned their prefect badges as carefully to their chests. Harry saw Ron checking out how it looked in the black window. Wait, that was changing? That's funny. At last, the train began to slow down, and they heard the usual racket up and down. As everybody scrambled to get their luggage and pets assembled, ready for departure. Ron and Hermione were again supposed to supervise all of this. They disappeared from the carriage again, leaving Harry and the others to look after Crookshanks and Pigwidgeon. I'll carry that owl if you like, said Luna to Harry, reaching out for Pigwidgeon as Neville stowed Trevor carefully in an inside pocket. Thanks, said Harry. She likes doing that kind of writing when she goes, thanks, mm-hmm. said Harry, handing her the cage, but I don't think people really do that. Handing her the cage and hoisting Hedwig's more securely into his arms. They shuffled out of the compartment, feeling for the first sting of the night air on their faces as they joined the crowd in the corridor. Slowly, they moved toward the doors. Harry could smell the pine trees that lined the path down to the lake. He stepped down onto the platform and looked around, listening for the familiar call of first years over here, first years. But it didn't come. Instead, a quite different voice. A brisk female was calling, first years, line up over here, please. Oh, first years to me.
Oh, good.
Did you okay with that?
Yeah, good.
A lantern came swinging toward Harry, and by its light, he saw that the prominent chin and severe haircut. Oh, it's not who I thought it was.
It's Grubbly Plank.
Yeah, a Professor Grubbly Plank.
But that sounded good.
Oh, okay. That'll be her, then.
Yeah.
The witch who had taken over Hagrid's Care of Magical Creatures lesson for a while the previous year. Where's Hagrid? He said out loud. I don't know, said Ginny. We'd better get out of the way. We're blocking the door. Oh, yeah. Harry and Ginny became separated as they moved off along the platform and out onto the station. Jostled by the crowd, Harry squinted through the darkness for a glimpse of Hagrid. He had to be here. Harry had been relying on it. Seeing Hagrid again had been one of the things to which he had been most looking forward to. There was no sign of him at all. He can't have left, Harry told himself, as he shuffled slowly through the narrow doorway, onto a road outside for the rest of the crowd. He's just got a cold or something. He looked around at Ron or Hermione, wanting to know what they thought of the reappearance of Professor Grubby Plank.
Grubbly.
Grubbly Plank. But neither of them was anywhere near him, so he allowed himself to be shunted forward, onto the dark, rain-washed road outside Hogsmeade Station. Here stood the 100 or so horseless stage carriages that always took the students above first year up to the castle. Harry glanced quickly at them, turned away to keep a lookout for Ron and Hermione, and then did a double take. The coaches were no longer horseless, but he should have noticed that last year. There were creatures standing between the carriage shafts. If he had to give them a name, he supposed he would call them horses, though there was something reptilian about them. They were completely fleshless, their black coats clinging to their skeletons, of which every bone was visible. Their heads were dragonish, their pupilless eyes white and staring. Wings sprouted from each wither. Wait, what's a wither? From each wither. Vast, is that what they're called, withers?
I don't know.
How would he know that at this point? Anyways, vast black leathery wings. They looked as though they ought to belong to giant bats. Standing still and quiet in the gloom, the creatures looked eerie and sinister. Harry could not understand why the coaches were being pulled along by these horrible horses when they were quite capable of moving along by themselves. "Where's Pig?" said Ron, right behind Harry. That Luna girl was carrying him, said Harry, turning quickly, eager to consult Ron about Hagrid. "Where do you reckon Hagrid is?" "I don't know," said Ron, sounding worried. "He better be okay." A short distance away, Draco Malfoy, followed by a small gang of cronies, including Crab Goyle and Pansy Parkinson, was pushing some timid-looking second years out of the way so that they could get a coach to themselves. Seconds later, Hermione emerged, panting from the crowd. "Malfoy was being absolutely foul to a first-year back there. I swear I'm going to report him. He's only had his badge 3 minutes, and he's using it to bully people worse than ever. Where is Crookshanks?" "Ginny's got him," said Harry. "There she is." Ginny had just emerged from the crowd, clutching a squirming Crookshanks. "Thanks," said Hermione, relieving Ginny of the cat. "Come on, let's get a carriage together before they all fill up." "I haven't got Pig yet," said Ron, but Hermione was already heading off toward the nearest unoccupied coach. Harry remained behind with Ron. "What are those things, do you reckon?" he asked Ron, nodding at the horrible horses as the other students surged past them.
"What things?"
"Those horses." At that moment, Luna appeared, holding Pidwidgeon's cage in her arms. The tiny owl was twittering excitedly as usual. "Here you are," she said. "He's a sweet little owl, isn't he?" Yeah, he's all right. "There he goes," said Ron gruffly. "Well, come on. Let's get in. What were you saying, Harry?"
"I was saying, what are those horse things?"
Harry said, as he, Ron, and Luna made for the carriage in which Hermione and Ginny were already sitting.
"What horse things?"
"The horse things pulling the carriages," said Harry impatiently. They were, after all, about 3 feet from the nearest one. It was watching them with its empty white eyes. Ron, however, gave Harry a perplexed look.
"What are you talking about?"
"I'm talking about, look."
Harry grabbed Ron's arm and wheeled about so that he was face to face with a winged horse.
Ron stared straight at it for a second, then looked back at Harry. "What am I supposed to be looking at?" he said.
"At the... there, between the shafts, harnessed to the coach. It's right in front of us."
But as Ron continued to look bemused, a strange thought occurred to Harry.
Can't you see them?"
"See what?" "Can't you see what's pulling the carriages?" Ron looked seriously alarmed now. "Are you feeling all right, Harry?"
Yeah.
Harry felt utterly bewildered. The horse was there in front of him, gleaming solidly in the dim light issuing from the station windows behind them, vapor rising from its nostrils in the chilly night air. Yet unless Ron was faking it, and it was a very feeble joke if he was, Ron could not see it at all.
"Shall we get in, then?" said Ron uncertainly, looking at Harry as though worried about him.
"Yeah," said Harry. "Yeah, go on."
"It's all right," said a dreamy voice from behind Harry, as Ron vanished into the coach's dark interior. "You're not going mad or anything. I can see them, too."
"Can you?" said Harry, desperately turning to Luna. He could see the bat-winged horses reflected in her wide, silvery eyes.
"Oh, yes," said Luna. "I've been able to see them ever since my first day here. They've always pulled the carriages. Don't worry, you're just as sane as I am."
Smiling faintly, she climbed into the musty interior of the carriage after Ron. Not altogether reassured, Harry followed her.
And that's the end of chapter 10. Next we'll read chapter 11, called The Sorting Hat's New Song. Like that kitten, Boo?
Yeah.
Are you an adorable kitten, Boo?
Yeah.
I love you so much, kitten. Why don't you say goodnight to yourself?
Goodnight, self.
Goodnight, Harry kitten. Harry kitten.
I'm not a Harry.
You're not a Harry kitten. Mm-hmm. I was thinking Harry because of Harry Potter. Good night, Harry kitten. You're the most adorable of all the kittens in the world. I love you so much. Sleep well.